All right, Dylan, appreciate your time coming over here. We're at the, I can't ever say it right, the stinking OHCE conference, you know, getting ready for all the RV park exhibitors. So tell us what you do, you know, kind of who you are and how you help other RV park owners and guests.
Yeah, for sure. So we're Campfire Capital Group, based out of Greenville, South Carolina.
Nice.
We're kind of unique. We do two things really well. Number one, we help sellers sell their campgrounds.
Yeah,
so we're, we're, you know, outdoor hospitality investment brokers. So we do that. And then on the second piece, we're owners ourselves. So the second arm of our company is actually investment.
Uh-huh.
So we raise capital from investors, mom and pop.
Keep the sweet deals.
Exactly. No, I wouldn't say that, but we buy our own deals for sure.
Nice, nice.
And so we kind of have experience. We say, you know, being brokers makes us better owners and being owners makes us better brokers. So,
I like it. I like it.
But yeah.
Yeah, because brokers, you're seeing all, you're doing a lot of analysis, you're seeing a lot of deals. And as owners, you're experiencing a lot of the problems and the successes. And,
precisely.
And the evictions and the fun stuff and the cities changing and, you know, whatever. It's always something.
Absolutely.
It's an evolving industry.
Absolutely.
So that's great. So do you guys nationwide or you try to stay in the Southeast? Or?
So I would say east of the Mississippi for the time being, primarily Southeast focused.
Mm. Yeah.
But east of Mississippi, we've began to expand beyond just the Southeast, so we're doing stuff a little bit further north now.
I think the Carolinas and Tennessee are great.
Absolutely.
I don't see enough RV parks and a little bit of driving we've done in Kentucky, but Tennessee, North Carolina, you know, parts of Georgia, of course, but I really like Carolinas. I'm a Texas guy. I don't know a lot about it. You know, but
no kidding. From there?
I was born in California and then military family moved a little bit and went to high school and been living in Fort Worth, Texas.
Okay, so, excellent. I'm originally from Virginia.
Okay.
But spent a ton of time, obviously, all up and down the East Coast or Southeast primarily. But
I grew up in Dale City in Fredericksburg as a kid for a few years.
No, it's small world. Small world. Yeah, that's neat.
Well, I was in Fredericksburg when the DC sniper was at.
No kidding. Okay, now that was scary. Yeah, that was definitely scary.
Yeah.
But yeah,
my mom's you get out of third grade, you take your ass over.
Okay, I bet. Yeah. So we're Southwest Virginia natives.
Okay.
So like Christiansburg, Blacksburg area.
Okay.
But my brother-in-law actually lives in Annandale, like Fairfax County, Northern Virginia. And I have a lot of college teammates and whatnot all over. But
nice.
So there's a ton of beautiful land, like country in the, you know, Virginia, Carolina,
you have four seasons.
Kentucky, all of it. Yeah, you get to experience all four seasons. You
Texas is hot till Halloween.
Forever,
we get cold fronts.
And you can have year-round like camping. You know,
you get a little bit farther north. That's the cutoff.
It's over. Yeah, you're done.
Six months.
Yeah, you're done. 6 months. And
I don't know how folks in the Midwest and North do that. Like,
agreed.
Parks, like my RV, the little piece behind the toilet will pop if I don't put a heater on when it freezes 25 degrees
that's
outside.
That's it. That's exactly it.
You know what
it.
I mean? So if it's negative 10.
Yeah, how do you make it function?
I don't know
how
to do that.
There's a lot of those, the stuff in the Northeast, though, like some of them take advantage of the winter and then they basically just cater to like snowmobilers.
Yeah.
And, you know, outdoor enthusiasts from that way. But yeah, I would much prefer full year round camping ability with less colds. So, I'm right there with you. No, that's excellent. That's excellent.
That's awesome. So you guys like actively looking to buy more, or do you kind of just have a goal on like a few a year or pretty aggressive or?
So right now we're always looking,
Sure.
But we'd love to add, you know, one to two a year for the foreseeable future. Until, you know, if we had like an unlimited checkbook, then obviously we'd ramp that up quite a bit. But until we find that unlimited checkbook,
we'll grow
gradually, scale at a normal pace, and then, you know, aggregate a portfolio over time.
Yeah.
But looking to sell a lot more than purchase at the moment.
Sure,
For sure.
Yeah, and that way you're just keeping up with the industry. You're seeing the changes.
Yep.
You're seeing what they're going for. You're involved in it. You're in it at multiple levels. I like that. Because me, we build them and we manage them. And I have a four of my own, so I'm trying to build my portfolio.
That's excellent. Okay.
So I'm seeing it from other sides.
Yeah, no kidding.
Because when I tell people in the construction, like, hey, you're not just getting a construction contractor because we freaking run
yeah.
it too. We see
that's
them both
the thing.
Sides.
Yeah, you're getting both angles
you're
of it, which makes a ton
sides.
Of sense. Exactly. Now, that's
cool.
Killer. So you're doing, obviously, you're developing them out, and then you manage them your own, and then obviously do that for others as well. Okay.
Yeah. So that's I got started by building my first two mid-sized ones and then acquired two. And so it's soon. And we, you know, came up with a construction company from it. My two brothers have a background in grading and underground utilities, which is 90% of that. And I'm the business guy.
Yeah,
I'm getting better at being on the skid steer now, but
for sure.
But I'm not the pro at that.
Yeah, not the not
I'll get
the
down
primary for
some
now.
Pipe. I'll get in dishes. I ain't scared.
That's excellent.
But yeah, so we're on full on construction on that side. But so the natural progression was like, all right, I got forests, and like let's be contractors for other people, and then mean, that's why I'm doing this podcast, yep. just try to talk to more folks like you and yeah. just getting a stinking industry.
No, that's killer. What was it like going from developing to buying two that were existing, knowing what you knew from the development side, seeing like, okay,
yeah,
I don't know about this.
Yeah, well, the one that we bought, it was a little 10 site park in West Texas, and then right across the street was an extra lot, so we just immediately added six sites, added some basic marketing. So I was like, that seems like a win, because I had owner financing. This old man was like 83 years old, and he was like, give me $100,000, and I'm gonna retire. I'm like, you don't want more than that? He's like, just give me $100,000. I'm like, I drove out there the next day, and you know, he could cash everything. So it was a little bit of a judgment call.
But yeah.
Him and his son ended up doing owner financing. So I'm like, let's just do it. And
yeah.
So we got a hard money loan for 150, and then built the other six sites. And then later there was an extra lot, and we built a cabin because I saw that rentals were tough. A shipping container cabin, a little one bedroom, we're getting $750.
That's killer. No kidding.
So to answer your question, I don't know, because You just see it differently now. You have some experience, and you like have these pain points on whether it's dealing with a city, you know, like some cities they'll like to do some handshake deals if you're buying a park, you know, like, well, what's the answer to this?
Yeah, what's the actual answer that I can get on paper?
Yeah,
that I can revert back to.
Cities and counties, like, they like to play some games.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry. I was looking at a park in East Texas, and they have a rule that a unit has to be more than 800 square feet because there were some guys build them like out of like garages or something, and I'm like, well, my whole plan is to put some tiny homes here. They're 399 square feet. But they're nice. And he was like, well, just tell me they're RVs and I'll prove it. I'm like,
I don't know about that.
Yeah, come on, dude.
Yeah, I don't know how that's going to fly.
Is that
going
to go through on city council?
Yep. No, we've seen some of that. We've like municipalities saying one thing and then walking it back a couple months later or whatever. And it's like,
you got to be careful in your due diligence.
Oh, for sure.
Because that changes your whole strategy and you just kill a deal.
Absolutely. So that's interesting. What do you do from a management perspective, like company-wise? Like, is that your all's primary focus? Like, obviously, we want to continue to scale much like you.
Mm-hmm.
But of the two business like units that you have, which one's your primary focus?
Is it both? I think it's just RV park focus, because I know it's great just to be linear focused on like one certain thing. That's not what everybody tells you. But for me, it's just RV parks. I know that we love building them. It's a family business. It's my two brothers. My nephew, when he's not playing football, comes on the weekend. My other nephew's 19, works for me. My buddy's the electrician. You know, like, so it's like a family business that we're all trying to, I don't have them grow with me.
Yeah.
So on that side, and then the management is just, I just love RV parks. Like, just being able to talk to somebody and say, you know, I would love to 2 years be able to sell this thing.
Yeah.
I can't even get anywhere near for right now. I'm like, okay, let's come up with an action plan. What are you doing? What can we do to help? Like, just dig into it. Like, have you tried this? Have you tried working with the Chamber of Commerce?
Yep.
And then these fall events come in, do you figure out a strategic partnership with them? Like, to me, it's exciting. So to answer your question, both.
Yeah.
You know, because if I know I'm doing that, I know I'm on my correct path, and then I'm going to be able to build my portfolio as well and just have things and property that I'm proud of.
Yes, absolutely. That makes sense.
It's a little spread out, but I work a lot, so I don't care.
For sure. Hey, that's how it is. That's how it has to be at some point, right?
Yeah.
No, I get that.
So. Yeah, I think if I was going to ask you some capital questions, because I think it's really cool. I just learned this a couple years ago about, you know, private equity. They want to see something that's like, say, 6 to 8 parks that are run similarly, and, you know, you'll get a better 6 or 7 cap rate versus 9 or 10 to the public. So that's definitely a strategy. It's like, hey, how do I, you know, build my portfolio to where,
for sure,
you know what I mean?
I will also say, I think that is more an idyllic thing. Like, everyone thinks I'm going to develop a portfolio of 8 to 10 to 12 to 15, whatever it is, and then I'm going to sell it at a compressed cap rate.
Yeah.
We haven't really seen that pan out to a T. Yeah.
Like, all right. So it sounds cute.
It sounds great, right? It sounds great. I'm going to buy all this stuff at 9 to 10s. Yeah. I'm going to sell it for a 7. That's, everyone wants to do that.
Yeah.
I truly think we've have communication with some of the biggest fish in the industry.
Uh-huh.
We've not seen them pay 7 caps.
Okay.
Like,
especially this market.
Yeah. Like, especially right now. Yeah. So it's like, now will that change? Possibly.
Right.
And there's definitely like a portfolio premium that you could tack on, especially if you have well performing assets.
Yeah, but sure.
Another thing we've seen, like the guys that aggregate larger portfolios, they have not yet had, like, you know, if they have 12 assets in there, it's not like all 12 are, you know, top tier properties. It's like, I got 3 dogs in here, a couple that
we'd be nice if we have to deal with this for
you. Yeah. So it's like, we haven't seen a portfolio that was just like, oh, every single asset in this is performing at the level that everyone expected it to. So to where, like, you know, a private equity firm would say, yes, we need it. So now, that's not to say someone could not put that together. But we have not seen it. I think seven caps are still a reach. Even for
Especially with the interest rates and the cost of the debt, you know.
Absolutely.
It's got to pencil out.
How do you make it work? And it's tough right now. And we've seen, like, there's a large, one of the big fish, relatively newer player in the industry as of like 2021. They grew really quickly. They aggregated a nice size portfolio. They brought it to market. I know for a fact they did not get what they thought they were going to get.
Right.
And it didn't, and it hasn't moved. Like, it hasn't actually transacted yet.
Right.
So I think it's, everyone, it sounds great. Like, we're going to get 15 properties and then we're going to sell it for 7 cap. But I don't think in actuality it's functioning that way.
Well, the other side of that is I'm 38, so I could just keep them for a while.
Precisely. And there's nothing wrong with that either. Right. So we say everything. You know, everyone's like, are you a buy and hold guy, a fix and flipper? Like, you just, you know, coming to
take it
over and do whatever. We're like, I want the option to sell, but not the mandate to sell.
Yeah. Right?
Like, my long-term goal is to have legacy, have assets that cash flow, create wealth, and then be able to keep them as legacy properties.
Yeah.
But have the ability to refinance and take some cash.
It's
and
real
do
estate.
You want.
It's exactly. It's a different asset class. So if you're, most people know single family homes, you got a portfolio of 20 or 40 houses, you have to constantly be trimming the fat. You know, focusing on the successes and
precisely, you got to be cycling through. Exactly.
Parks aren't different. There's just a little bit bigger scale, but
absolutely. Generally, same concept.
One of our parks is only 100. I think a bank's going to appraise it for 450. It's my little success story on that one. But
that's killer.
But still,
killer. Yeah. That's a real estate play, right? Yeah. Like, that's success. And then it just scales up. You know, the larger the property, that goes from $1 million to $4 million.
Let's do that again.
Absolutely.
So you guys, Southeast kind of focused, do you have like a certain buy box? Or is, because like people ask me, what's your buy box? I'm like, dude, I bought that one for 100. But you know, I would get involved in one that's worth a few million. Like, you know, I probably wouldn't go much over 5 unless I had some different partners or something. But.
Yep. So we don't have necessarily like a buy box that we would say we're married to, but we have loose parameters that we play within, right? Like, we prefer, we would prefer 50 sites and up. We don't really have like price point. It's just dependent on the partners, right? Yeah. Like, but 50 sites and up revenue, I think there's a sweet spot. So like a lot of the private equity guys that we deal with, larger groups, like they want $1 million+ revenue now, 150+ sites or at least 100. I think there's some sweet spots to be taken advantage of below that.
Yeah.
You know, where you're not like only at $100,000 or $200,000 revenue properties, but like if you can go between 250 to 500, I think there's a lot of opportunity in that.
I agree, because it's a completely different park. I mean, you're getting more and more people that say, hey, I want to stay at a park, but I don't want to live in a effing parking lot.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
Like, there's this guy in Abilene that's going to build like 2,000 site park. And I'm like,
yeah. Like, you know, that's a parking lot.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's tough. We don't want that. Yeah. We want it to actually have like the outdoor hospitality feel with it's camping, it's experiential.
Yeah,
you can have
buy multiple pieces of land in that same area that you like and to do several precise ones. Because somebody that's staying at a 60 site park, half of those people don't want to stay at 150 plus one. Because it's just like, you know what I mean? Like, it's campers, the walls are thin.
Absolutely.
How close are you to a train? You know what I mean?
Like, absolutely. Yeah. And it's like, I'm not a huge fan of like a massive, purely RV park.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, this is a glorified mobile home park.
Yeah.
At this point. So we're right there with you. But not a strict buy box, but that's kinda, I think there's opportunity in that for sure.
Yeah, I like those.
Our preference is Southeast for our own sake.
Because the way I see it, Texas and Florida gets a lot of attention.
Yep.
Arizona, they get the eyeballs for sure, the snowbirds, just eyeballs, but just, you know, Carolina's right there. It just doesn't seem like there's that many parks, and it seems like everyone I went by are pretty good performing.
Agreed. No,
it sounds like, what am I missing here?
There's definitely some opportunity.
Because if it's Texas, they're like, we're going to build some more.
For sure. Yeah, we're going to build them all. So it's more regulation in the Carolinas. So you can't just throw them up left and right.
Yeah.
But it is also like,
you got to have a GC license and go to 40,000 in North Carolina.
Yeah.
I was about to get that license.
Okay.
But I didn't need it yet. But anyways.
Yeah. So it's like, there's definitely opportunity. Like, there's a lot to like about the Carolinas.
Yeah, it's an appreciating area. People want to live there. The weather's good.
There's not nearly as much inventory online though as you see like in other areas, like Texas specifically.
Yeah.
But there's definitely opportunity there for sure. And us being there, like we own in the Carolinas, so we own in North Carolina currently. We live in South. We would love to have some stuff in South Carolina.
Yeah.
There's just not a lot available.
Yeah.
At the moment, at least. That's reasonably priced, I should say.
There's always something.
There's always something if you got a deep enough pocket. But
yeah, we're. I'm seeing in Texas alone like a 50% increase in inventory this year.
Oh yeah.
Are you seeing similar Southeast?
Yeah. So I wouldn't say 50% increase, but it's definitely there's some folks that are really ready to do. You know, ready to trade.
What do you think it is?
I think a lot of people are aging out. A lot of people are getting tired. Some just changing hands, like Next Gen took it over and they're like, I don't really love this after a year or two of actually being in it, having to work it.
Yeah, because OHI stat was, I think 75% of park owners are mom and pop, owner for 20 plus years.
Yep, so exactly. Yeah, it's natural. Like we deal with a lot of folks that are like, it's that. They've had it for, like we're selling a property right now. They've had it for, it's like year 10. This was their working retirement.
Yeah.
And now they're like, we'd actually like to retire.
Right, right.
Sold several where it was like, hey, we did this, you know, I left my job. I put all my retirement into the campground to buy it.
Yeah.
Now we've done it for 15 years and we'd actually like to take a break and rest. So I think there's a lot of that. Some, I imagine, is like folks were trigger happy during COVID.
Yeah.
Bought when stuff was really high.
There's a lot of eyeballs
on the industry now. The occupancy was super high.
Yeah.
Now, it settled down. It's back to kind of normalize. And I think some people are like, this is not what I thought. And so they're trying to get out. But
yeah, during COVID, everybody was full.
Exactly.
You know, now you need to like actually
try. Have a business plan.
You got to pull out all the stops.
Yep.
You know, you got to do the things other people aren't willing to do to get the occupancy they ain't got.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And that's not always easy.
Yeah.
Right? So, I think there's a culmination. I feel like if you talk to 10 different sellers specifically, like you might get five different responses on why we're letting go.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I definitely find it interesting though. Like I remember speaking to one lady a month or two ago, and she's like, I got an appraisal for $1.5 million. I'm not selling for a penny less. I'm like, well, what is the income?
Yep.
I'm like, so look, well, bankability says no.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
The SCR, the numbers that you're giving me now, no bank is going to give me that where my loan payment is more than what the net income is.
Exactly.
And she's like, but I'm like, it's not a house. You know,
it doesn't work.
Yeah.
Doesn't work. And I think that is
the SCR. Yep. Houses are off appraisal.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think that's a disconnect. So there's obviously, a number of folks that are willing to sell. And then there's an entire different disconnect between what that price should be versus what it pencils at. Right.
Yeah.
So or what they're asking versus where it pencils. So
it's like what? Well, neighbor down the street got $3 million. So mine's got to be worth 2.5.
Oh, yeah. They treat it like houses.
Yeah.
It's like this is not the same at all.
And
we hear that appraisal game all the time where it's like, well, it appraised for this. And it's like,
appraisals are always great.
That's
for RVs.
Wonderful.
I don't think I've ever seen an example where appraisals came back trash.
It was bad, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
They're always good.
But it's like, truthfully, I don't know how the appraisal works. We're looking at the same numbers, this doesn't math.
I got a funny story on that one. So my first parks that I built in Whitney, I got an appraisal, and the next one we were building was in Oklahoma, and it was pre-construction, based off proposed, land value, and then what it's going to be worth after we build it. And so the lady called to make an appointment, and I was like, oh, really? So how are you basing this off of? Because it's rural Oklahoma. There's not many comparables. And she was just kind of bluffing. I was like, oh, really? That's crazy. Because my Whitney Park, they did X, Y, and Z. And you want me to just send you that report?
She's like, actually, no.
Yeah.
Don't send me that.
She said yes. I sent her the report. And what do you know? The numbers came back looking just like that. She copy and pasted it.
No kidding.
I'm like, you're not doing your job.
Absolutely.
You're not a very good professional.
I'm just going to take what they did already.
Thank you for those good numbers. But
thanks a lot. Yeah.
I was blown away. How's that ethical? And
it's insane. I mean, that's not uncommon across any real estate where it's like oftentimes appraisal comes right at the ask price or the contracted price. It's like,
come on.
Every single time, really?
Yeah. We're just trying to get deals done. It's a professional opinion economy. Value.
Yeah, like, please, give us something that's real here and tangible. So
awesome.
Now we're there.
Well, cool, man. I appreciate your time. I think that's a good little episode, a good conversation we had.